Hey, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of The Adventures of Sam Spade. This episode is from October 5th, 1947. The episode is entitled The Adam Fig Caper. I'm just trying to clean up on some earlier episodes that I seem to have missed somehow. So I kind of retraced my steps and found out what I had posted and what I hadn't. And then I got dates and everything accordingly to kind of marry all that up. So I'm kind of even right now, which I feel good about. So now I can start posting some of these episodes in relatively good order. Despite the fact there's like about 120 episodes missing of this series, and I'm wondering where they are, and if there's anyone that collects this kind of stuff and knows where there might be more of The Adventures of Sam Spade episodes. We're missing 13 episodes from the ABC series for summer, and we're missing about 80 or 90 episodes from the CBS run of The Adventures of Sam Spade, and if y'all know where there are, please let me know at otrrob50@gmail.com. Other than that, enjoy this episode, and I'll be back after this with something good.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Oh, Sam, I got it.
Got what, my pet?
A bank book, Sam.
Well, you must advertise in the Lost and Found right away, Effie, and find the owner. There might be sickness in the family.
Oh, but it's your bank book, Sam.
What?
Uh-huh, it has your name on it. Samuel Spade, account number 4.
It's a forgery. Somebody's trying to pin something on me. Lock it up and don't touch it until I get there.
Oh, all right. Did you make a lot of money on this one, too?
Got the check right in my pocket. $500.
Oh, Sam, we're making more money than a movie star.
Well, almost.
And all honestly, too. $600 last week and $500 this week.
Yeah, how about that? Life gives a 3-page spread to I Spy Molten. But we mustn't let it turn our heads, Effie.
No.
We gotta stay in there pitching. I'll be right down to pitch my report on the Adam Fig Caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with The Adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. You've heard the saying, you never know until you try. Well, you'll never know how handsome your hair can look until you try Wild Root Cream Oil. See for yourself how neatly and naturally Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair. Note how effectively it relieves annoying dryness and removes loose, ugly dandruff. You can get Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic in either the big economy-sized bottle or the handy tube. Or you can ask your barber to use it on your hair. But by all means, try it. Don't delay. Get it today. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Sam
present.
Hmm?
Oh, you're going to love it.
Well, we got to watch these expenses, Evie. You know, there's always something.
Yes, but this will be saving. It saves confusion and saves fretting.
Mm-hmm. Now, this gadget here, what is it?
It's a mental robot.
A what about?
It's for busy men like yourself, Sam, so you don't have to burden your mind with petty details. You see, it has this dial on it, yeah. Right here. And you drop these little cards in this slot. Mm. You don't have to worry about that. That's for me to take care of.
Oh, good.
Then, when you come into the office, and supposing you have an appointment with Mr. Jones at 2 o'clock, and you forgot about it, you just dial 2 o'clock, and the little card pops out. And it says Mr. Jones on it.
How do I remember to dial 2 o'clock?
Oh, well, maybe it's in the instruction book. But anyway, now go ahead, Sam, please. The card's right in there. Now, dial 2 o'clock. Go on, Sam.
Let's see.
Just like a telephone, Sam.
Now what do I do?
Well, give it time, Sam. It's thinking.
Must have forgotten. Jones. Mr. Jones. Effie, you think it's dead?
Oh, Sam, I don't understand it. It was working perfectly. Well, I'll take it straight back first thing in the morning.
You'll have to. It'll never find the way itself. You got your book, sweetheart?
Yes, Sam. I don't understand. It was working perfectly.
Well, it's
a little
all
while
right.
Ago.
It doesn't matter. Date, October 5, 1947, to Hillary Exxon Esquire from Samuel Spade, license number 137596.
Oh, Sam,
oh, honey, it's only a memo robot. Subject, the Adam Big Caper. Dear Mr. Exxon, October 2nd in San Francisco was one of those days that you see blown off the calendar by a gust of wind in the movies to denote the time is passing. It was a day for scraping off the minutes with a fingernail file and wondering whether the display ad I'd paid for in the classified section of the phone book wasn't just a waste of money. It certainly wasn't the day I'd expect a leprechaun to walk into my office. He said his name was Adam Fig. He said he was the butler at Exxon Manor in Los Nidos.
The limousine, Mr. Spade, is waiting to take you away. We mustn't keep them waiting, must we?
Of course we mustn't. Who mustn't we?
Why, Mr. Hillary, of course, sir.
Oh, Mr. Hillary.
And old Mr. Exxon. The old gentleman is very ill.
Dr. Feige's office is down the hall. Turn to your right, second door.
Well, I assure you, sir, that Mr. Exxon is the best of medical care. Your duty will be simple, to prevent his death.
Do I donate blood or just frighten away the evil spirits?
Oh, it isn't quite that, sir. Someone is trying to kill Mr. Exxon. He's a very sick man, and I'm sure he'd prefer dying from natural causes.
I get $25 a day in expenses.
Here is an ample amount in advance. But you should know, sir, that the old man is a nasty, cantankerous, villainous, crooked, infidel.
$500? Please, Fig, you're talking about the man I love. Los Nidos was at least an overnight caper, so on my way out, my lovely and charming secretary, Miss Corrine, handed me a brown paper bag which contained A, one pair of socks, darned, B, one shirt, ironed, and C, the apple which she always polishes for me the night before. We arrived at your large southern-style mansion 2 hours later.
Pig, where the devil have you been?
The city, sir.
I can't find the keys to the liquor closet. Where are all the maids? What happened to that cook we hired yesterday? Who is this man, and why is he wearing that necktie?
This is Mr. Spade, sir, the detective.
I'm Hillary Exxon. Come in, please. Go on upstairs, Pig. See what that girl is doing to my father. I don't believe she's a nurse at all.
Very good, sir.
In here, Mr. Spade. Pardon the condition of the house. The old man has been firing the servants again.
Your father, you mean?
Yes. Every time he gets shot at, he fires all the servants.
He gets shot at pretty often?
About once a year, in the fall.
Uh-huh. You always hire a detective?
No. Oh, dear.
I'm not keeping you up, am I?
No, excuse me, please. It's much worse this time. I can't get any sleep. Guns going off in the middle of the night. The whole household disturbed.
When and where was he last shot at?
Yesterday morning at about 1:30. I dug the bullet out of the woodwork myself, a .38 caliber, embedded in the door frame that leads to Miss Kaywood's room. That's his nurse.
Was she with him at the time?
No. No, Dad sleeps like a baby, full of sedatives. She sees to that.
Shot come from outside?
Yes, but we found nobody on the grounds. No traces of anybody. I don't know whether Dad knows who shot at him or not. He's such a closed-mouthed old devil.
You don't care very much for your father, do you?
To be frank, Mr. Spade, if hating weren't such an effort, I would despise him. He is without a doubt... Well, listen.
Get out of here!
There, that's just a sample. Well, come on, let's see what's eating him now.
All right, now get out of me like that. I tell you, I won't stand for it.
Well, you don't have to stand
for it. Take that silly painted face out of my sight.
Don't you dare.
Get out.
I'm quitting, Mr. Exxon. I can't stand another minute. Yelling, screaming, throwing things at
you. You must have done something to set him off.
I didn't, I tell you. Oh, I didn't.
This is Mr. Spade, Miss Kaywood.
Oh, a detective. Oh,
will it make you happier to know that I'm a private detective, Miss Kaywood?
Mr. Spade, I only hope you can prevent a murder. If there's any way at all that I can help, I...
Thanks. I'll see you downstairs after I've talked to the old man.
You'd better go in alone, Spade. Oh, Miss Kaywood, do you have a throat spray downstairs? I seem to be congested.
Go away! Go away! Go away! Oh, well, wasting ammunition. Who are you? If you're a total stranger, come on in. But don't be afraid, son. Come on over where I can look at you. It's hard to keep my eyes open. Oh, I mustn't do that. Oh, so you're the detective, eh?
That's right, Pop. If you want to take a little nap or something, I'll come back later.
What did I say just now? Come back later? No. There's no reason for you to come back later. I'll say everything I have to say right now. The shot woke me. I didn't see anything. I don't know anything. I've got a million enemies. I can't remember the names of any of them.
Why don't you try to remember? I could have them checked.
You're wasting your time, Sonny. In my day, I've wiped out 100 men, and I'll outlive anybody who's gunning for me now.
You must be proud of your past, huh?
Proud? Sonny, a past like mine is the finest thing an old man can have. I've swindled my partners and betrayed my friends. I've turned state's evidence just to see my associate get sent up for 20 years. And they say my wife died under peculiar circumstances and I got rich off her insurance. Now I'm done talking. do me a favor, son, please. I've got to get a half hour, 20 minutes sleep alone. You'll keep them out, everybody. Please, will you?
Sure, Pop. Go ahead. Go on, sleep.
Oh, thank you. That's it.
He closed his eyes, rolled over, and fell into a heavy sleep. I stood there a moment, looking down at the frail, wasted old body. Then I cased the room. In digging the bullet out of the door, Hillary had done a good job of ruining any chance there might have been of proving the direction it had come from. I strolled out on the balcony. It was a pretty night. I lit a cigarette and took it in. Then I heard a door open and close softly behind me. Nurse Kaywood was at your father's bedside. She was filling a hypodermic from a small vial of bluish liquid. He didn't awaken when she jabbed it into his arm. Then she saw me standing in the doorway. She hastily dropped the medicine vial into her uniform pocket and came around the bed to meet me.
Oh, Mr. Spade, oh, thank heaven. Why, when I saw you standing there in the half night, I thought you might be...
Thought I was who?
Why, the man who fired the shot.
It was a man?
I don't know. I didn't see it happen. I just
Eleanor,
assumed that maybe...
You shouldn't have done it. I warned you, sir. Eleanor.
Oh, we're disturbing him. Let's talk outside.
Okay.
Good to breathe something besides sick room air.
I thought you got used to things like that in your profession.
Why are you so unfriendly, Mr. Spade? Nurses are humans, aren't detectives?
Try me, sweetheart.
Oh, I know what you're thinking of me. But after a week in this horrible house, that poor old man, he's frightened. He's really frightened.
What of?
By the shot.
.38 caliber or hypodermic?
Surely you don't think that he's supposed to be under sedatives, but... The doctor's orders.
Sorry, sweetheart. It's my job to suspect everybody.
Oh. Can't you forget your job, even for a moment?
Sure. If you don't mind the fact that I know you're a liar, that I'd make book you didn't come here primarily as a nurse, and what's worse, your act's not even convincing.
Oh. Is it that bad, Sam?
Yeah. Almost bad enough to be good. Come here.
Oh, I hate you.
It was a very satisfactory love scene for both of us. For reasons of her own, Barbara wanted to keep me out of that sick room for a while, and she did. For reasons of my own, I wanted to get that medicine vial out of her uniform pocket, and I did. Then, as suddenly as we had fallen into love, we fell out again. After she'd gone to her room, I went back to my sentry duty around the house. Under a light on the front veranda, I examined the bottle from which Barbara had taken the injection for your father. It was labeled sodium thanatol and had been dispensed by a firm called Ibis Chemicals Limited in Cairo, Egypt. jerked up so abruptly that it seemed her neck had snapped. She clutched both hands to her chest and fell face down among the bedclothes, staining them with her blood. I don't know whether I went through, over, or around the screen that stood between her room and the old man's. I circled Exxon's bed. He lay on the floor on his side facing the window. I went outside. A .38 automatic lay on the ground a few yards away from the building. I put that into my pocket and listened. No shadows moving. Nothing. Then he was on me before I could be sure he wasn't a medium-sized tree.
Oh, break your back, me delight.
The warm stuff in my cheek might have been the thing's blood or mine. It gathered me up and bent me back and tore at my throat. Then I remembered that hands are stronger than fingers. I started with his thumbs. He lay there for a moment, then his huge body began to twitch. He was holding his fingers and sobbing like a baby. I pulled him up to his feet and poked him in the back with the flat of my hand. I followed him through an opening in the hedges and down a long, pitch-dark lane toward the lights of a squat brick house set on the top of a slight rise. As we approached it, a door opened and light streamed out onto the porch. The tall man framed in the doorway was the last person in the world I expected to see.
Ah, oh, Marcus, you brought him.
Oh, master, very delightful service, but how much pain him.
Always complaining, Marcus. Welcome, Mr. Spade. Come in, my dear fellow. Come in. I've been expecting you. The lost family fortune blackmailing me.
And if you don't remit, Exxon could have you booked for forgery, blackmail, definition of character.
Oh, my dear sir, please. This is most painful. But if I had but the original letter, I could destroy it and go back to the felt. Ah, the felt.
What happened to it?
That stinker stole it. He burgled my home.
Are you taking pot shots at old Exxon?
Well, don't be a fool, man. I want Exxon to stay alive. I must find out some part of his life which will have an exchange value that will cancel out what he has on me. By the way, old thing, you met Miss Kaywood.
Mm-hmm.
At the present moment, she's milking me for $150 a day.
Oh?
She's supposed to goad the old man by whatever means necessary into talking about his past. And that information she is to bring to me.
Well, that ought to be easy. Exxon brags about his past.
Now, so far, I've learned that Hillary Exxon stole two heifers at a livestock show in Abilene in 1906.
I feel for you, Captain. That wouldn't get much on the current market, would it?
My dear fellow, I've a proposition to make to you. Should you ferret out anything that would be of value to me, I'll reward you handsomely.
Well, maybe something can be arranged, Captain.
Good, excellent. May I have your word on that?
Well, there isn't much time, Captain. I'd better trot on back.
I'll show you to the door, sir. And let me warn you, Mr. Spade, for your own good, should you ever hear the thrum of Ivy's wings, run. Flee.
I assured him that I would heed his warning, bade him good night, and started back down the lane in the direction of Action Manor. Business was going on as usual. There were no shots this time, only the scream. When I got to Barbara's room, you and Adam were standing at her bedside trying to quiet her down.
Well, Mr. Spade, is this the way you guard the house against intruders? Where have you been?
Ask Adam.
What does he mean by that thing?
I'm sure I don't know, sir. I've not left the house.
What happened here?
Oh, she woke up screaming. She said someone had come into the room and torn off her bandages. A nightmare, of course.
Please, I don't want to talk to Mr. Spade, Lord. Oh, please go. Adam, you go too. Please, Hillary, you go too.
Good. Some questions I want to ask you, sweetheart, alone.
But look here, Spade, look here. She just had a terrific shock. She shouldn't be questioned.
Well, the code of detective transcends that of the medical, Mr. Hillary. Perhaps he should have a few minutes alone with Miss Kaywood.
Oh, very well, big eye. I suppose he's no best.
Remember what the doctor said, Miss Barbara. Not too much exertion.
What happened, Barbara?
Well, it could have been a dream. Somebody was standing over me in the darkness and peering down at me. And then he started to rip off my bandages and I screamed. And when Fig came into the room and he turned on the lights, he was gone. It could have been a dream, Sam, and I could have been clawing at the bandages myself in my sleep.
But you weren't. It wasn't a dream. I've been talking to Captain Sherry.
And then I thought, well,
how much do you know?
That you've been feeding the old man truth serum to get him to talk in his sleep.
Oh.
How much talking has he done?
Well, plenty.
How much have you told Sherry?
Well, just as little as possible.
Why?
Because, Sam, if we can keep that old man alive and out of jail long enough to sell what we know to Sherry for what it's really worth,
We'd be fools not to do it.
What makes you so sure you'll stay alive long enough to collect, sweetheart?
Well, because you're going to help me, aren't you, Sam?
So I helped her, but not for the reason she thought. I made a lot of noise leaving her room and going to mine. Going back, I didn't wear any shoes. I slipped into a clothes press in her room so quietly that even she didn't hear me. I left the door slightly ajar and waited. Time passed, and I was stiff from standing still. It happened at about 3 a.m. The crazy, feverish glare of his eyes told me the threat of the gun in my hands meant nothing to him. I jumped to his side, twisted the knife away from him, picked him up in my arms, and carried him, kicking, clawing, and swearing, back to his bed. He lay there, breathing hard. Then he smiled.
You're a smart one, Sonny. You had me figured out the first time you came in here, didn't you?
Not quite, Mr. Exxon. The gun under your window was the clincher.
That gun? Sure. I had it under my pillow all the time. I got tired of shooting into door frames.
Look, you're dying, Mr. Exxon. There's no use trying to make up stories now.
You're right, Sonny. I knew that nurse would sit up in bed after I fired tonight. And then I let her have it right through the screen.
Why?
You know why well enough. She was doping me up and sneaking in here at night, listening to what I was babbling about.
Maybe you weren't saying anything important, Mr. Exxon.
I might have, Sonny. I might have. 14 years ago, I killed my wife. I wanted to carry the secret to my grave.
You nearly made it at that.
Spade! What's happened?
Is he dead?
He's dead.
Did he say anything, sir? Did he confess it?
You must tell me if he said anything.
I didn't hear him say a word.
Oh, well. Yeah, Mr. Spade. Charged with a certain texture, a significant quality.
There's a certain smell, yes.
Ah, an omen. You can inhale it, sir. Journey thou to Nairobi on the felt. Tarry 7 days, and you will collect the fabulous golden skull of Wizami, king of the Bojamas. Ah! Marcus!
Yes, master.
Unhook the hookah. Pack the marmalade. We are off to the felt.
Just then, a flock of birds broke across the horizon, screaming. There must have been thousands of them, but not ibis, Mr. Exxon. Vultures. I suppose if you're going to pay any attention to omens, it's a good thing to know your birds. Period. End of report.
Right now, I have something to say to every man who doesn't use a hair tonic, to every man who says, I don't believe in it or I don't need it. That all depends on what you mean when you say hair tonic. If you mean the old-fashioned greasy kind that leaves your hair smelling like a perfume factory, you're absolutely right. But remember, Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic is nothing like that. Wild Root Cream Oil is an entirely new kind of hair grooming preparation. There's not a drop of alcohol in Wild Root Cream Oil, and it contains soothing lanolin that's like the oil of your skin. Most important, Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair the right way, neatly and naturally, never leaves your hair sticky or greasy. Get the big economy-sized bottle and the handy new tube that's economical, easy to pack when you travel, and grand for the bathroom cabinet. Don't delay, get it today. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, Effie, we,
Sam, the memo robot worked after all. I told you it would.
Yeah, it just takes a little time, sweetheart.
Oh, read the card, Sam. You see? You'd know you were supposed to see Mr. Jones at 2 o'clock. Isn't it wonderful?
Well, this card doesn't even mention Jones.
Huh? What does it say, Sam?
Well, it says, journey thou to Friskin's Drugstore, wager $5 on Ira W. in the third at Belmont Park.
Oh, Sam, it's psychic.
Tarry but a moment.
Yes?
Thou wilt lose $5.
Oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. This is Dick Joy reminding you that next Sunday, author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. Smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too, for quick, good grooming and to relieve dryness between permanents. Mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, it looks like this is take two. I had just finished introducing this episode and was getting ready to edit it as I normally do when I do an introduction. But when I went to go find the clip I had just recorded, it wasn't there. So I'm starting all over again. Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob, not doing well with Pat Novak for Hire. This episode has no date. The episode is entitled The Church Killing, or A Killing in a Church. Either way is correct, I suppose. Jack Webb has the distinction of being one of the few radio creators which had a program on every network with the exception of Mutual. And he may have even had one there, I don't know. But he had one on ABC, one on CBS, and two on NBC. Actually, he had three on NBC, if you consider a later show, which was called Pete Kelly's Blues, based on the film he was in. He also was doing that while doing Dragnet and a bunch of other stuff. He was a very busy man. Enjoy this Pat Novak for Hire with no date. Speaking of which, I don't have a date either. Oh, well.
Pat Novak for Hire. Sure, I'm Pat Novak for Hire. That's what the sign outside my office says. Pat Novak for Hire. Or you can set it to music or put it up in neon. But down here on the waterfront in San Francisco, you're too busy staying alive to worry about the next guy unless he's pointing a gun. Most of the time, you got as much chance as a flypaper fly on his solo flight. But it works out. Oh, I rent boats and do anything else to keep my stomach and my conscience running even. It's like juggling hot marbles on a high wire. But it's a living, and you haven't any more kick coming than a swimmer diving into an empty pool. I found that out last Tuesday night. I was sitting in my office after dinner, watching the fog stream through the gate and wrap up the bay for the night. Up on Russian Hill, the lights were just going on in the $1,000-a-month apartments, and right away you got a picture of warm rooms and cold martinis. I guess I was feeling sorry for myself, so I started to page through an old address book full of bad debts and tired memories. I was getting older by the page, and the regrets were piling up around my knees when the phone rang. Novak talking.
This is Father Leahy, Patsy. Are you busy?
Yeah, Father. Tearing up old phone numbers.
Are you reforming or angry?
Neither one, Father. They just wore out.
You sound sad, Patsy. Expect them to last forever?
Nothing's that good. What's on your mind?
I want to ask you a favor.
Make it a small one, Father. I'm all out of big ones.
It's a small one, Patsy, for you.
Yeah, another customer told me the same thing, Father. His brother was on the way to the chair. He wanted me to smuggle in some rubber underwear.
I'm asking, Patsy, not begging.
Okay, Father. What do you need?
Can you see me in about an hour, right after the evening rosary?
When's it over?
8:30. But don't be afraid of coming early.
No, I'll take a rain check on that, Father.
That's what Noah's friends used to say. I'll see you at 8:30.
It was a little before 8:30 when I started up the steps of Father Leahy's parish church. I figured the services were over, so I hung around in the vestibule for a couple of minutes, trying to look like a part-time bell ringer. The last few people straggled out. Then an altar boy came out and gave me the high sign. He was a clean, Irish-looking little kid with a face the size of a minute and just about as young.
Are you Mr. Novak, sir?
Yeah, that's right. You the lookout?
I'm an altar boy, Mr. Novak. My name's Jake Siegel. Little Jake Father calls me.
Yeah. Well, where's Father Leahy now, Jake?
He's back in the sacristy, Mr. Novak. He wants you to wait inside here.
No, this'll do. I'll wait right here.
No, sir, Mr. Novak. I'm sorry. Father says to be sure and bring you inside.
Okay, little Jake, lead the way. I guess I was too busy trying to act like I knew my way around to pay much attention to a fat, chunky little guy when he stood up in the back pew a couple of aisles over. Little Jake seemed to peg trouble in the air.
Mr. Novak, that man back there, what's he doing?
All right, Quinlan, here's your payoff. Turn around and take it.
Jake, get down.
Mr. Novak, look out, look out!
Down on the waterfront, you'll learn early to look for trouble, any place, any time. You can find it at the top of the mark or at the bottom of the bay, but this is the first time it caught up with me in the middle of a church. The lead got as thick as confetti on New Year's Eve. I spun around and I made a dive for little Jake, but I wasn't soon enough. He went down like young wheat in a hailstorm. When I grabbed for him, I must have hit my head in the base of a marble pillar or something, and things got dark for a minute. I stumbled down the aisle and into the street after the guy, but the odds were all on his side. The fog was so thick you couldn't read a newspaper with a Klieg light. I guess I covered every alley and street in the neighborhood, but it was like running after a hat full of feathers in the middle of a windstorm. Oh, I don't know how much later it was when I stopped for a minute in an empty doorway and I tried to remember what I was chasing. A siren was crying somewhere in the distance, so I started back for the church. The coroner's wagon was just pulling away when I got there, and Father Leahy had disappeared. I saw a light in the rectory, so I went upstairs and rang the bell. He came to the door in his shirt sleeves. He just stood there for a minute looking at me. Then he motioned me inside. You want to see me, Father?
Yes. In here. Sit down.
The kid, Father. Little Jake.
What do you think?
Yeah. They go fast?
Instantly.
I'll get the guy, Father.
I'm not asking that, Patsy. I'm not asking you for anything anymore, unless I need trouble.
No, somebody told you a bad story, Father. That wasn't my gun.
I should have known better than to call you. I should have known it meant trouble. It's your middle name, Patsy. You're married to it.
You're looking at the wrong man. It wasn't my party.
I called you here tonight to ask you a favor, Patsy.
Anything you want, Father.
It's too late now. We were going to have an altar boys picnic tomorrow over at Paradise Cove. I wanted to borrow one of your boats. We won't be going now, Patsy. We've got a funeral instead.
Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Don't say anything, Patsy. Just listen for a minute. I asked you to come up here tonight, but I didn't tell you to bring your friends. If you've got any private fights with those waterfront hoods, that's your business. But don't bring your beefs into the church.
And I tell you, I never saw the guy before. I don't know anything about it.
He was shooting at you when he hit little Jake, wasn't he? What else am I supposed to think?
Yeah. They find the murder gun?
Nothing. Your playmates are neat, Patsy.
I liked you better without the temper, Father.
And I liked you better before your hands got dirty, Patsy. I warned you about that waterfront crowd, the cheap thugs, the cheap women. I told you, Patsy, roll around in dirt long enough and some of it's bound to stick to you. You got it all over your face and your hands and it's working inside you, Patsy. It's working in deep.
At the end of the sermon, Father?
I tried to warn you, but you had it figured. Well, figure this one, Patsy. There's a 9-year-old kid on his way to the morgue. He stepped in front of a bullet and saved your life. Now go ahead. Figure it.
Yeah, I will, Father. But you better be on call when I catch up with the guy. He's going to have a lot of praying to do. When I left Father Leahy, I checked in at the church for one more look around. A couple of red-faced Irish cops in uniform were wandering around the vestibule trying to look at home and chewing gum like mad to kill the beer on their breath. And over in one corner, half a dozen old women had their heads together clucking like hens over a square egg. Outside of them, the place was deserted. I gave the course a quick rundown. A couple of aisles over, where I figured the gunsel must have passed, I picked up a matchbook. The ad on the front said Max Joint, Cicero, Illinois. And there was a phone number scrawled inside the cover. I was just about ready to toss it away when a bell rang and I took a closer look. It was my phone number. I put the matchbook in my pocket and I started home for the apartment. Maybe the cab wasn't going fast enough because halfway there, 3 years' stock of headache caught up with me and the ceiling started to jump. Oh, the cab driver was kind, though. When we got to my place, he offered to help me as far as the curb for an extra 4 bits. By the time I made it to my front door, I was feeling lower than N-man at an Irish wake. The reception committee didn't help much. They were short and dark, all three of them, with rolls of loose, oily fat where their necks should have been, and small pig eyes that squinted through the cigar smoke rolling out of wide nostrils and up their faces.
Hiya, Novak. How do you feel?
Lots better after you find the door.
Hey, Dex. Novak don't like us.
He'll cultivate a taste.
No, they don't build stomachs that strong.
Hey, nice. It's easier that way.
Now look, Buster, I don't know who you three pigs are, but I was...
Novak. Remember, be nice.
Yeah, I'll remember.
You West Coast punks are all alike, Novak. Couple of taps and you cry. Ain't that right, lad?
Maybe Novak's tired, fellas. Help him into a chair.
Yeah, Novak. Sit down.
Lud wants to say something.
All right, then say it and get out of here.
We want the gun, Novak. We want the papers that go with it.
Sounds like a great puzzle. Sorry, I can't help with the answer.
You better tell Lud, Novak. It's liable to get rough.
All right. My gun's over there in the desk and the paper's on the wall.
Be nice, Novak.
Just once more, Novak. Where's the gun and where's the papers?
Look, I'll spell it for you. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Dex, Mac, get his arms.
Yeah.
All right, hold his head up.
Yeah. Okay, Lud, there.
This the way they do it in Cicero?
Last time round, Novak. The gun and the papers, where are they?
I don't know.
The gun, Novak. The papers.
No use, boss. We lost them.
All right. It's a big flaw. Let him find his own way back.
For summer. When I woke up, the sun was bleeding through a rip in the blinds, and there was a funny smell in the room. My stomach felt like a piece of practice rope at a Boy Scout class. And then the room got noisy.
You wake up slow, Novak. Have a hard night.
Oh, you're never on time for the party, are you, Hellman?
I'm choosy, Novak. I don't like your friends.
All right, then take up social work. What's the occasion?
I've got a phone tip. When I drop up for a visit.
You're having fun?
Yeah. There's a gal in the kitchen bored to death.
Huh?
Take a look.
Hard. Who is she?
Sally Kimbrough. That's what her driver's license says. She a friend of yours?
How would I know? Even her mother couldn't tell.
Messed up, isn't she, Novak? Must have been a rough party.
I wouldn't know, Hellman. I closed early.
It's your joint. What happened?
I said I closed early. Three gunsels were drinking my scotch when I got home about 10:30. They were anxious about a gun and some papers, and they figured I could put them straight. I couldn't, so they laid me out. Now tell me how sorry you are.
I bleed for you, Novak. Now let's have it straight.
That's as straight as you're going to get it, Hellman. If it's not exciting enough, try Esquire.
You talk brave for a punk in hot water.
I'm not going to scream till it burns.
Then you better start practicing, Novak, because I'm going to burn you.
You better hurry, Hellman. Your pension's catching up with you.
Watch your mouth, Novak. You're not talking to your gunsel friends.
Now, that's hard to tell, Hellman. You both use the same technique. Now show me the warrant before I start charging your rent.
That dame's body is all the warrant I need, Novak. Now talk. How did she get so dead?
I told you once. Pick up the three gunsels and ask them.
What they look like?
Like you. The size smaller. They're from the east, around Chicago.
What else?
They wouldn't leave their birth certificate.
Go ahead, smart boy. Get in all the laughs you can.
But don't ask me to con the parole board for you.
No, I don't know, Hellman. You won't be there. Maybe I'll like prison life. When you're knee-deep in rain and your boots spring a leak, you might as well throw them away and take your chances barefoot. Hellman and his boys left with the body, and I grabbed a handful of aspirin and a cold shower. Then I started out to look for the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. A pretty smart man until he found out you can poison your worries at $4 a fifth. I finally found him sitting in the middle of a bourbon fog in a little Spanish joint somewhere on the edge of the Excelsior District. He was down at the end of the bar trying his best to make time with a plaster bust of Queen Isabella.
Patsy, you're just in time for a short one. Bartender, hand me that vase.
Come on, Jocko, sober up. I gotta talk to you.
Patsy, here's to your own peculiar brand of happiness.
Jocko, will you cut it out?
Patsy, I don't mean to be rude or ungentlemanly, but I don't think I altogether approve of the clientele in this place.
Yeah.
Shh. This woman next to me, Patsy, the one with the stony gaze, she's been here ever since I came in. And I don't mean to be uncharitable, but I think she's the picture of a perfect bore.
All right, all right.
Patsy, to a member of the old Castilian school, there can be no excuse for the conduct she's exhibited. Why, do you know I was even good enough to buy her 3 rounds of Portuguese brandy? Imported, mind you. But what do I get for my pains? Not even a civil thank you.
All right, Jocko.
I've been sitting here in the most gentlemanly way, sipping this delicate nectar in great mouthfuls and trying to keep the party going. But does she help? No. I've talked to her about politics, medicine, literature, Keats, Byron, Shelley, Nick Kenny. Well, I've even talked about the weather.
Jocko, she's a statue.
She's a simple oversight, Patsy. Might happen to anyone.
Listen a minute, will you? I'm in trouble.
You're always in trouble, Patsy, and that's the way you'll stay till you find some kind of moral rudder. You've got to find direction instead of trying to be so righteous in an evil sort of way. Get in tune with our decaying civilization. Like me, Patsy, why tempt the fates? It's much more practical to buy off your destiny with a good fifth of Irish whiskey.
You all through, Jocko?
Yes. What kind of trouble this time?
3 gunsels from the east. They're shooting up the town, and I'm running front for their murder raps.
Patsy, why not plead guilty? The rest might do you good.
Somebody shot a 9-year-old kid, an altar boy.
Oh. Where did that happen?
In Father Leahy's church. The gunsel took me for somebody else and started shooting.
Problem's getting bigger, Patsy. What am I supposed to do?
I want you to check on a guy by the name of Mike Quinlan. Also a girl, Sally Kimbrough. Tagged by the Examiner and the Chronicle morgues and nose around the horse parlors out on Eddy Street, will you? Find out everything you can.
Well, all right, Patsy, but you've broken up a beautiful party. You've disillusioned me about Queen Isabella here, and I've suddenly grown dreadfully thirsty again. Let's have 4 or 5 for the road, shall we?
Later, Jocko. We haven't got time.
Well, only if you say so, Patsy. But every time I leave the hallowed confines of a barroom, I'm a poor pilgrim caught up in the vices of the crass everyday world. A tattered orphan leaning disconsolately against the bitter winds of chance, tossed and buffeted about endlessly by the cruel storms of fortune. By the way, I'll need carfare.
All right, here, 1/2 buck.
But, Patsy, refreshment.
Later, now get going, will you, Jocko?
Where can I find you?
I'm going to check by my office, then I'm going to see Father Leahy.
Well, as soon as he mentions taking the pledge, that's your cue to leave. Good night, lover.
When I left Jocko, I caught a cab downtown, and on the way, I started hunting for just a piece of the answer. But all I got was questions. Who were the 3 gunsels, and what was the stuff they were after? Mike Quinlan, where did he fit in? And that dead girl in my apartment, who did she belong to? Well, the zeros were piling up faster than flies on donuts when the cab pulled up for a stop sign at 16th and Mission, and a little guy with a worried mouth and a loud sports shirt jumped in. His lips were wound around a phony kind of smile, like a head waiter just before he hands you the check for a big party.
It's okay, driver, we're friends.
How are you, Patsy?
Friendship comes easy for you, mister. You got a name?
This is for keeps, Novak. I want to talk.
You've got until the next corner.
We both mean it, Novak. Me and the gun.
Now look, Junior, if you want to play the heavy, go find a melodrama.
Who are you working for? Sandell?
That's as good a name as any. All right, here's your corner.
Sally Kimbrough. Where is she, Novak?
You're fast with a question, mister. Let me ask you one. Who's Sandell?
I got the gun, Novak.
Yeah, well, who's Sandell?
I'll do the asking. You sit there, make the answers.
Oh, you're running out of tickets, Junior. Come here.
Oh.
All right, now reach down for that gun and I'll jam you through the floorboards. Who's Sandell?
It's a Chicago hood. He's out to get me. It works both ways.
That's a good plot. Now, who are you?
Mike Quinlan. All right, now what about Sally Kimbrough?
They mopped her up off my kitchen floor this morning.
Somebody's going to get Sandell.
Maybe we're on the same train. What's he look like?
Fat men all look alike.
All right, you can leave any time now.
Sure, Novak. Affair's getting high. See you later.
Well, the whole thing went faster than a Mexican divorce. The black sedan pounded by on all 12, and Quinlan folded up like a playpen in a high wind. We tried to follow the car, but it would have been easier to win the Kentucky Derby on a pogo stick. So I went back to the corner where Quinlan was still hugging the cement. He was draped over the curb like a tired carpet, and if his suit was a brighter yellow, he could have passed for a loading zone. Hellman was there with all his relatives in uniform, so I told the cabbie to drive on. I just couldn't seem to shake the picture of little Jake when he went quiet in that church. Well, when I got close to a phone, I paid off the cabbie and I put in a call to Jocko. I called Newton at the Examiner morgue, and he said that Jocko had just left, so I called Breen's. I asked for the guy who was drinking the cheapest whiskey in the tallest glass.
Jocko Madigan speaking.
This is Novak. How'd you make out?
Let me tell you about these pack of newspaper men down here. Men of high birth, Patsy. True breeding. They like scotch almost as much as I do.
What'd you find out about Quinlan?
My Eddie Street informants tag him as an ex-con, Patsy. Sent up for armed robbery in 1940 and paroled about 2 weeks ago from Joliet. Quinlan had a few dealings with a man named Lud Sandell. From what I can gather, Quinlan's supposed to have taken the rap for Sandell and his brother.
What else?
Quinlan's a local boy out of Bernal Heights. He has a sister, Patsy. She belongs to Sandell. She's probably the only sales girl in town with a 6-room apartment in the best part of the marina.
Did you get the address?
Oh, the Bayview Towers, down at the foot of Fillmore Street.
Sounds good.
Maybe she has a friend.
Did you get anything else on Sandell?
The Turk Street set tells me he's out here to set up a slot machine route. I gather he's the pushy type.
Thanks, Jocko. I'll see you at the apartment.
Oh, Patsy, on your way home, pick up something for dinner at the delicatessen, will you?
There's stuff in the icebox. Fix yourself a sandwich.
Patsy, dinner without bourbon is life without hope. I'll borrow from the neighbors. Good night, lover.
When I hung up, I caught a D car out on Van Ness Avenue and I headed down into the marina. The answer box was still fat with questions and little Jake's killer held a 4-lap lead, but at least the field was getting thin. I figured it was 1 out of 3. Sandell or either one of his gunsels, but which one? But when I got down to the foot of Fillmore Street, the fog was thicker than ankles at a fat ladies' convention, and foghorns out beyond Yacht Harbor started on overtime. The Bayview Towers was one of those swanky, new-looking places that gets old in a hurry. It saw lots of brass and brunettes during the war, but now the only uniform left belonged to the doorman. I found Quinlan's sister in the penthouse apartment. And when she opened the door, you felt like Clyde Beatty with a broken chair. Her lounging pajamas reminded you of a good butler. They came in and went out at the right places, and they stayed close to the job. I felt like the Fisk boy after somebody blew out his candle.
Ah, talent on the loose. Won't you come in?
Yeah, it'll save time. My name's Novak. I got some news for you.
I'm Bobby Quinlan. Don't go so fast.
I'm looking for answers, lady. If you want a companion, advertise. Your brother's dead. Sandell shot him.
My, such a big imagination, Mr. Novak. Why don't you relax? Here.
Look, I got proof in my pocket, baby. You want the rest of this couch now?
I've been lonesome, Novak.
It's going to get worse with your brother gone. Take a look at the paper.
Later, Patsy.
Where have you been practicing?
You're getting weak, Patsy. I can feel your heart pounding.
Yeah, now let's quiet down and talk murder,
Patsy,
shall we?
Patsy, you're hurting. You're hurting me.
Where's Sandell?
Please, Patsy.
Where's Sandell? Where is he?
Patsy, my arm. You'll break it.
I'll tear it off and throw it away. Now, where's Sandell?
I don't know. I swear I don't.
He killed your brother. He shot him down on the street.
It's a bum joke, Novak.
All right, if you won't believe me, take a look at this chronicle. Right there on the front page.
You're lying, Novak.
Look at it.
No. And Bill promised he wouldn't touch Mike.
Why complain? Think how Mike feels. Now, where's Sandell?
He's down at the hotel, the Durban Arms on Eddy Street. He lied to me, Novak. I played it straight, but he lied to me.
Yeah, you're a mistake, baby. I'll see you later.
Don't leave, Novak. Party's just started.
Dex, why'd you do it? You lied, you and Sandell. You promised me, and you killed him.
Timorous, sweetheart. Somebody had to go.
Like that altar boy, huh?
Got it once, Novak. It's tougher the second time.
There's no second time, Dex.
All right, sweetheart. Now take him back.
Yeah, you're finished even, baby.
They promised me that, but they lied. He and Sandell, they killed Mike and they lied. Hold me, Patsy.
Sorry, baby, you make this trip alone. There wasn't anything I could do for them, so I took a cab down to the Durban Arms on Eddy Street, but Sandell had checked out an hour before. The clerk told me his baggage was still around, though, so I figured that could only mean one thing. I put in a call for Hellman, and then I grabbed a cab and headed for Father Leahy's. By the time I got up on the hill, a fog had taken a lease on most of the town. You can always tell when it's thick because all the sounds out in the bay get a free ride. Halfway there, the driver was ready to quit, but for an extra $2, he threw the cab in second, and we crawled the rest of the way till we got a block from the church. By that time, the fog was so thick you could have sold it with a pound. I did the last block on foot. I was just about 20 yards away when I spotted Sandell and Mac the Gunsel standing under a streetlight just outside the door to the church. They waited a minute when they turned and started up the steps. Don't bother, Sandell. You called too late.
Huh? Who is it? Who's out there?
It's a spark plug, Lord Novak.
Novak, come closer. I can't see in the fog.
Come on out and get me, Sandell.
There he is, Mac.
You're flying blind, Sandell. You made the trip for nothing. I got the gun and I got the papers.
He's lying, Lud.
Come on out, Novak. Make a deal.
I said you're late, Sandell. I already made the deal with Mac.
You're funny, Novak. This'll shut you up.
Not even close, Mac. Which one have you got the altar boy?
You sound worried, Novak. You want to tell him, Lud, or should I?
Mac deals a lot better than you shoot, Sandell. Ask him about it.
Huh? What's he saying, Mac?
He's saying nothing, Lud. He's talking crazy. Let's go out and get him.
Ask Mac about this afternoon, Sandell. Ask him where he was when Dex got it. Ask him how I got the gun and the papers.
He's crazy, Lud.
I'm not so sure, Mac.
Don't be a sucker, Lud. Novak's playing cute.
Sorry, Mac. You took the chance.
He's cunning you, Lud. He's lying.
Could be, Mac, but I can't chance
it. Lud, you fool!
All right, Sandell. Now it's just you and me in the fog.
Come on in, Novak. We'll work a deal. Come in where I can see you.
All right. That's 5 shots, Lud. You got one left to make good on. All right, Sandell, now we're even.
Come here.
Let me go, Novak.
Yeah.
Lay off, Novak. What did I do to you? Cut it out, will you? You didn't get hurt.
Talk to that altar boy, huh?
I didn't mean to hit the kid.
Oh, I'm sick of your mouth.
All right, Novak, that's enough. Novak, I said that's enough.
Yeah.
Let go of him. This Sandell?
Yeah, that's him.
A few minutes ago, we could have booked him for murder.
You can have him now, Hellman.
You saved the state some money, Novak. Neck's broken.
That you, Patsy?
Over here, Father. On the steps.
Hello, Inspector.
Father?
This the man, Patsy?
Yeah, Father, that's him.
I'll pray for him, Patsy.
Why waste it, Father? He wasn't worth it.
They said the same thing about two men on a hill in Calvary.
Thank you.
got lots clearer for everybody. The story was the cheap earth and pine, but then so were the characters. After Mike Quinlan joined up with Sandell and his boys back in 1940, they pulled a bank job in Chicago, and instead of cutting in Mike on the take, Sandell framed him to take the rap for the three of them. Then Sandell came west to operate and lined up Quinlan's sister for his girlfriend. By the time Quinlan was paroled, he was fast on Sandell's game, and he had lots to beef about. He lined up enough good evidence to put Sandell and his two boys away for life, and then he threatened to spill it if Sandell didn't cut him in for his share of the job and stay white of his sister. Sandell wasn't generous, and he wasn't genteel, so he played along with his tongue in his cheek and a gun in his pocket. When the time came to swap money for evidence, Quinlan picked the church for a trading ground because that's where he'd hidden the box with the evidence. That's where we finally found it. The deal was all set to go when something scared Quinlan off and Sandell came in, mistook me for Quinlan, and hit little Jake. Sandell's boys tried to get at Quinlan through his girl, Sally Kimbrough, and when she wouldn't spill, they killed her and planted the body in my apartment to take care of the opposition. Mac and Sandell were in the black sedan when it finally caught up with Quinlan in the alley off Mission Street. Well, what did I get out of all this? Nothing. Father Leahy took Jocko to dinner at Lupo's a couple of days later. Jocko's bar bill read like a social security number. Hellman asked only one question. How could Father Leahy ever pay for a dinner check that big? I don't know, but when he got back to his church, I noticed he slipped an IOU in the poor box.
The American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States, and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education. Solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction. Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure.
9 hours to live. For Nick Carter and the Death House Mystery.
And now, a late news bulletin. 9 hours from now, at the stroke of midnight, Johnny Waldron, the blonde-faced killer convicted of the murder of Mrs. Cornelius Fielding, will go to the chair. Just 30 minutes ago, the condemned man made a last request. But Johnny Waldron did not ask for a sumptuous last meal in the tradition of the condemned. Nor did he ask to see his nearest and dearest relative, his wife, Laura. No, Johnny Waldron's request was for something much more dramatic. He asked to see the great detective, Nick Carter. Now, just what this last-minute conference means is anybody's guess. Perhaps a reprieve for Waldron. Perhaps a clue as to what happened to the Fielding jewels, which up to now have not even been found. At any rate, the master detective, Nick Carter, has consented to talk with Waldron and is probably at this very moment entering Death House Row. Keep tuned to this station for further dramatic developments.
Where have you got him, Dad? He's in number one. We moved him to number one this morning. You see, it's a shorter ways to walk to the chair, number one.
You all ready to go?
Yeah, the barber was in and shaved his head and legs about an hour ago.
How's he taking it?
Oh, there ain't been a peep out of him. Don't want nothing to eat. Don't want a chaplain. Nothing at all. The only request he's made is to see you. Funny time to ask to see a detective, huh? If you don't mind my asking, Mr. Carter, what made a big shot like you decide to see him?
Well, maybe I'm curious to know what's in his mind. Or maybe I'm just a softie about a fellow who's going to die in a few hours.
Well, I don't believe that you got any sympathy for a criminal. Not you.
Not when a man's a killer.
Well, here we are.
Here's your company, Waldron.
Oh, hi.
Hello, Waldron.
Oh, Mr. Carter.
You got 5 minutes.
All right, guard. Well, Johnny?
Oh, so you did come. Gosh, I was afraid you wouldn't.
Well, I must admit, I was surprised when the warden called me and said you wanted to see me.
Yeah, I imagine you were. Gee, it was sure nice of you to come.
Let's skip the formalities, Johnny. Time's too short for chit-chat. Come to the point. What's on your mind?
Mr. Carter, you think I'm guilty, don't you?
Well, didn't follow your case too closely. But you had a fair trial. You were found guilty. What would you have me believe?
I'd like to have you believe that I'm innocent.
Pretty late in the game to convince anybody of that, Johnny.
Oh, I'm not looking for a last-minute reprieve. That isn't what I asked you to come out here for. Well, I got word a little while ago that the governor refused my last request for a reprieve. I just made up my mind that I'd only be kidding myself if I hoped any longer.
Why did you want to see me, Johnny?
Mr. Carter, I know I haven't got a chance. I'm going to be gone in just a few hours now. But I could go a lot easier if I thought that maybe someday the world would know the truth. They'd know that Johnny Waldron was innocent.
Johnny, if I thought you were innocent, I'd start the wheels turning right now to get your reprieve.
Oh, wait. Let me finish, Mr. Carter. I know you don't believe me. Nobody does. I guess I couldn't expect you to believe me after the way things went at the trial. But sitting here in death row, waiting, the idea came to me that maybe Nick Carter would show him someday. Of course, I'd be gone, but, well, you see, there's Laura, my wife. She's going to keep on living, and it'll be hard for her.
I suppose she believes you're innocent.
Oh, she's stuck by me swell. She's a wonderful woman, and I don't want the world to look on her as the widow of a murderer. Mr. Carter, all I'm asking is that after I'm gone, in your spare time, will you try to prove that they executed the wrong man? Just for my wife's sake.
Johnny, if you're innocent, who do you think did rob the Fielding safe and kill Mrs. Fielding?
I don't know, Mr. Carter.
What? There's nobody you even suspect?
Well, the only one No. No, I'm not going to accuse somebody I'm not sure of. I've only got a few more hours to live, and I don't...
If you don't want me to do anything for you, Johnny, you better tell me everything you can about this.
No. No. You'll find them for yourself once you start looking.
Well, I've got to have some kind of evidence to go on.
I don't have any. Cards were stacked so well against me, but go see Laura. She's never stopped working for me. Maybe she knows more by now.
Look here. That's the case. Why haven't you had a lawyer working for you right up to the last minute?
Lawyers. I never had that kind of dough. Oh, a couple of shysters came around thinking maybe I had the Fielding jewels tucked away someplace. When they found out they weren't going to get a cut, they faded pretty fast. Even if you decide to do anything for me, Mr. Carter, I wouldn't be able to pay you for your trouble. You'd have to do it just as a favor to a dying man.
You don't know where the jewels are?
Why, no, Mr. Carter. How could I know? I didn't do that job. Look, you go see Laura. She'll tell you whatever she can.
All right. Time's up, Mr. Carter.
All right, Garrett. Well, Johnny, I'll look into your case.
I don't suppose you believe me.
I bet he's been telling you an innocent man is being sent to the chair, huh? He tells that to everybody.
Did it ever occur to you, Guard, that he might be telling the truth?
Why?
Well, so long, no. Johnny. Good luck.
Oh, thanks for coming, Mr. Carter. And thanks for whatever you can do for me, sir.
I'd very much like to know what happened to those Fielding jewels.
Huh? Oh, yes. Well, maybe they'll turn up while you're investigating.
Think so? I wonder.
Say, Guard, how long is it until I...
8 hours, Johnny. Just 8 hours more.
Hello, Nick Carter's office.
Oh, Patsy, this is Nick.
Oh, Nick, thank heaven you called. This place is a madhouse. The office is filled with reporters. The newspaper and broadcasting companies have been telephoning. The district attorney has been trying to reach you.
Well, what's the trouble?
They want to know if you're going to try to get a reprieve for Johnny Waldron.
Hmm?
The DA said he'd stick around his office all evening. And he's contacted the governor, and he'll be on tap ready.
Reprieve? Well, great heaven, I just talked to the fellow. I don't have any evidence, none whatsoever. What's the matter with the DA?
Well, when Nick Carter goes to work on a case, even at the 0 hour, something usually pops.
Well, tell him to hang on to the hats a while. And you, Patsy, go up to the courthouse and get a transcript from the Waldron trial. Dig up what you can out of our files about Waldron. I'm heading back from State's prison right away. Meet you in front of the office.
All right, Nick. But we're going to have to work fast. They throw the switch in exactly 7 hours and 40 minutes.
Waldron was really hired as a chauffeur. It was brought out of the trial that he ingratiated himself with the old lady every chance he got.
Oh?
You know, Mrs. Fielding was an invalid. Waldron used to carry her up and downstairs and waited on her and all that sort of thing. He was inside the house a great deal. Then, let's see now. Oh, the gun was traced to Mrs. Fielding's stepson, Tom Fielding. But the prints on the gun were Waldron's.
Her stepson lived there with her?
Yes, just the two of them. Waldron and all the other servants slept out and reported for work in the mornings at 8.
When was the body found?
On a Thursday night at 10 o'clock, the library of the house. Tom Fielding came home from his club and found her. The safe was open and the jewels and money gone. Of course, any of the servants, as well as Tom Fielding, might have known the combination of the safe. Mrs. Fielding often opened it in front of all of them. The defense harped on that at the trial, but Waldron's prints on the gun and his alibi being so flimsy cooked his goose.
I see. See.
How did Waldron strike you, Nick? Guilty?
It's the evidence that tells the tale in any case, Patsy. If we could find the party who has the missing Fielding jewels...
It would look pretty grim for that party.
Yes, it wouldn't look good, that's sure.
Oh, Nick, look at the time.
Ah, 5:50.
In 6 hours and 10 minutes, an innocent man may be electrocuted.
Oh, no, Patsy. No innocent man will be electrocuted for a crime he didn't do. Well, my name's Nick Carter. And here's our first stop, Patsy. His old tenement house. Laura Waldron lives here.
You're very nice to come to see me, especially today.
Mrs. Waldron, this is my assistant, Patsy Bone.
How do you do, Miss Bone?
Hello, Mrs. Waldron.
Won't you two sit down? Here, let me dust the chair.
Oh, no, don't. It's perfectly all right.
Since Johnny's been away, I haven't been as good a housekeeper as I used to be. I've no heart for it anymore.
Mrs. Waldron, I came to see you because...
I know. You went to see my husband. I heard on the radio.
Yes, that's right.
But it's too late to get Johnny off, isn't it? Besides, we don't have any money to pay a famous detective.
Mrs. Waldron, the only fee Nick Carter ever asks is that justice be done.
Now, Mrs. Waldron, tell me about Johnny. His habits, what he likes, what he doesn't like.
Johnny's good, Mr. Carter. You see, I know he's innocent.
But have you proof, Mrs. Walden?
Proof? No. Just my heart tells me he wouldn't kill anybody. But more than that, I know because he was with me at the time the police say she was killed.
Prosecution tore his alibi to shreds.
Yes, a wife's testimony doesn't count for much in court. Oh, yet how thankful I am that he was with me that night, that I know he's innocent. You understand what I mean, don't you, Miss Bourne? You understand when I say the world can stand against your manhood if you know he's right and good and true to you.
Mrs. Waldron, isn't there any way at all it can be proved that your husband was home with you that night?
No. No. You don't think of providing alibis for staying in your own home. There isn't much I know, but it's ours. Tom Fielding has offered to help me. Now Johnny's going to be...
Tom Fielding? You mean the stepson of the woman your husband's convicted of murdering?
Yes.
In what way has he offered to help you?
Money. He knows Johnny isn't a murderer.
His testimony in court didn't follow that line, Mrs. Waldron.
Of course not. Mr. Fielding had himself to protect.
That's right, Nick. Fielding was under suspicion.
Just this afternoon he called me again. And where's the jewels, I said to him. If my Johnny did it, where's the jewels and the money? Would I be begging for work if Johnny had done it?
You're working now, Mrs. Waldron?
Day work. Scrubbing up places where they don't ask too many questions. Oh, but I'd mop the streets of this town from one end to the other every day. Johnny didn't have to die.
Oh, don't, Mrs. Waldron. Don't cry, please. Please don't cry.
You have to excuse me. Just, I can't stand to think. I'm counting the minutes and seconds now. Only a few more hours, Johnny will be gone.
Mrs. Waldron, I'd like to ask you another question.
All right.
Maybe Nick can save your husband yet, you know.
Oh, if he only could.
There isn't time left for me to chase down every witness and question them. Tell me, Mrs. Waldron, whom do you suspect of robbing and murdering your husband's late employer?
Who? Oh, Mr. Carter, I have no proof against anyone.
I didn't ask if you knew who murdered Mrs. Fielding. I only said, whom do you suspect?
But I have no right to suspect him.
Right? What do you mean?
He's been so kind and offered to help.
Tom Fielding. That's who you think did it.
Oh, I never dared think it out loud before. He was her stepson, you know, but she loved him like her own.
Oh, they had their quarrels. Oh, they were just money facts. I'm not saying he did it, only...
Only what?
You talk to him, Mr. Carter.
All right, I will. We'll go right over to the Fielding house now.
Oh, but you won't find him at home at this hour, Mr. Carter. He's always at the club at this time. I know from when Johnny used to drive for him.
That's the old Hunt Club, isn't it?
Yes.
10th and 5th. Mm-hmm. Come on, Patsy, let's hurry. Time's precious.
Okay.
Goodbye, and thank you. I'll be right here waiting and praying you find the guilty man in time to save Johnny.
Nick, there's something puzzling you. What is it? Didn't you think Mrs. Walden's story made sense?
Well, it did, and it didn't.
But, Nick, doesn't it seem a bit odd for Tom Fielding to offer her money?
Yes, if that's true.
Well, then her story does make sense.
Patsy, it's not what Mrs. Walden said that's bothering me. Something else.
Something else? What is it, Nick?
I wish I knew. But there's something that doesn't fit into the picture. It's in the back of my mind somewhere, but I can't quite get the key to it.
And if you ask me, Tom Fielding is the one who could straighten out a lot of things.
And he's the man we're going to tackle right now. Now... This Hunt Club's pretty swanky, isn't it?
Good evening, sir. Can I park your car for you?
Fancy place. Still has Dorman and Porter.
Oh, I beg your pardon, miss. Ladies aren't permitted in the old Hunt Club. I'm sorry.
Well, that lets you out, Patsy.
I guess it does.
You better wait for me here.
Yes, I guess I'll have to. Oh, Nick.
Hmm?
It's 8:15. Only 3 hours and 45 minutes to go until midnight. missing again, Nick. Fielding wasn't at his club, so he's got to be home here.
Uh-uh. Your womanly intuition isn't working right tonight, Betsy. Not a light in the whole house. I don't think anybody's home.
Oh, Mr. Fielding, if you only knew how much time we've wasted looking for you.
Well, Patsy, maybe we can uncover enough evidence without seeing Mr. Fielding face to face.
What are you going to do?
A little high-class lockpicking in the interest of Johnny Waldron and his wife, Laura. There we are. All right, come on in. Stay behind me.
Gee, it's dark in here.
Shut the door and I'll use my flash.
Where are we headed for?
The library.
Oh.
That's the room Mrs. Fielding was killed in, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. These old houses, the library is usually back this way, off the center hall. Come on.
All right. You think there's anybody beside us in the house?
I hope not. Ah, here we are. This is the door. This must be it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is the library.
What are we looking for?
Well, right now, I'm looking for Mrs. Fielding's safe.
Safe?
Mm-hmm.
Safe. Oh, it's behind that portrait of her. That was in the testimony.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Betsy. Oh, turn on that small lamp, will you? Take a glance at the papers on the desk while I open this safe.
Say, Mrs. Fielding held her son and heir down while she was living. He's certainly making up for it now. Look at that wine cabinet. It's filled to the hilt with pre-war stuff. Oh, and look at this black market stuff. Half a gold-tip cigarette, Miss Bowen. Yes, thank you. I will.
Patsy, shame on you. How'd you feel if Tom Fielding walked in here right now and caught you swiping his expensive cigarettes?
Only one, Nick. And for that matter, how would you feel if Mr. Fielding saw you about to open his safe? Oh, Nick!
Patsy. You okay?
Yes, I guess so.
They shot through that window there. And the bullet went right in the side of the desk here.
Oh, we better get out of here, Nick.
Now, 1 minute, Patsy. Gotta see what's in this safe. It's almost open now.
Well, who do you think shot at us? Mr. Fielding?
Oh, Patsy, will you pick that bullet out of the desk? It'll be a handy piece of evidence.
All right. So you're taking this attempt to murder us awful lightly, Nick.
I don't think it was murder, Patsy.
Not murder?
No. You were standing by the wine cabinet, not 4 feet from the window. And I was a perfect target standing here. No, Patsy, I think you'll find somebody was just trying to scare us away.
Oh. Well, I got the bullet out. Looks like a .32.
There we are. Patsy.
Yes?
Look here.
The missing jewels. Oh, Nick.
Yes, right here in the safe.
Oh, Nick, that's wonderful.
Hey, Patsy, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm getting the DA on the phone for you. You've got the evidence for Johnny Waldron's reprieve.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I know he wasn't guilty, Nick. Mrs. Waldron was telling the truth.
Patsy, put down that phone.
Yes, Nick.
Now, get me police headquarters first. I want a general alarm sent out for Tom Fielding.
But Johnny Waldron...
I still have 2 hours, Patsy. If Waldron's innocent, I'll prove it in time to save him from the chair.
Nick, why should you want to talk to Mrs. Waldron again when you haven't asked for the reprieve? Only make her feel worse.
There's something about her that doesn't add up, Patsy. And I've got to know what it is before I go any further. This is her door, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Nick Carter, your thinking on this case is beyond me.
Well, Patsy, it's hard to explain. When I don't know myself what the missing link is, how can I explain it to you?
But you found the jewels. Tom Fielding had them in his safe. Why, it's obvious, Nick. He didn't get along with his stepmother, and he... Nick, what are you doing?
Going to open Mrs. Waldron's door?
Oh, no, don't do that, Nick. I'm sure she's here. She's probably been crying and doesn't want to see anybody. Let me call her first. Mrs. Waldron? Mrs. Waldron?
Oh, sorry, Patsy. We haven't any time to waste. Now, let's see. Where's the light switch?
It's here by the door. Oh, she isn't here.
So it seems.
Nick.
Hmm?
Look here. There's a gold-tipped cigarette in this ashtray, the same kind we saw at Fielding's house.
Let's have it. No lipstick on it. Kind of pinched in near at the end.
He's been here. I never would have believed it of him.
Believe what?
Well, that a man like Fielding would come to a place like this. Why, a man like that wouldn't get his hands dirty putting them on the doorknob of a hovel like this.
Say that again, Patsy.
What? Well, a man like Fielding wouldn't dirty his hands on the doorknob of a place like...
I got it. Patsy, you just gave me the key I've been looking for. Come on. We've got to get back to Fielding's library or there'll be another murder.
You know, Patsy, there are times when having a siren on this car comes in handy. And tonight's one of them. Hope we're in time.
Do you think the police have picked Fielding up yet, or do you think he'd be at his home?
He's at home. I'll bet my bottom dollar on that.
Nick, do you know what time it is?
Stop worrying about the time and come on.
I'm right with you.
The place is still dark.
There's a little light shining in the hallway.
He's here, all right. Watch your step, Betsy.
Don't worry about me.
I slipped the latch on the front door when we left. Let's see if it's been bolted. No, still open. All right, come on.
Where do you think he is?
The library, probably.
Oh, I hear someone, Nick.
Yeah, they're both here.
Well, that's Mrs. Waldman's voice. Open the door, Nick.
No, it's locked. Try to pick it.
Help! Help! Oh, Nick, hurry.
I am hurrying.
Stay away from me! Help! Help!
He's killed her.
There.
Oh, Mrs. Waldron. Oh, thank heaven you came. He was just going to shoot me. I got the gun away from him and... Oh, you shot him? Yes, Mr. Carter. But it was self-defense. Anyone can see that.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you, Mrs. Waldron.
It was worth it. It was worth it. Now Johnny will be saved. He won't have to die in the chair.
Nick, you've only got 7 minutes to call it. 7 minutes to 12.
Hurry, Mr. Carter.
Just a minute. Calm yourself, Mrs. Waldron. Here, have a cigarette.
A cigarette? All right.
May I light it for you?
Thanks. Wait a minute till I get my cigarette holder out of my bag.
So, you do use a cigarette holder. I thought so.
Nick, the time is getting awfully short for your call to the DA.
I'm not going
to
make that call.
Why, Nick, not going to make it?
No, Mrs. Waldron. It was a nice frame-up you and your husband tried against Tom Fielding, but it didn't work.
Frame-up?
Yes, frame-up. You and Johnny staged this whole thing to get him a last-minute reprieve. It was pretty clever, but you made a couple of mistakes. For example, this gold-tipped cigarette butt I found in your apartment tonight.
What about it?
When I found this butt in your apartment, all pinched in at the end from having been smoked in a holder, I knew you'd lied about not having seen Tom Fielding. These particular cigarettes are made to order for him.
I didn't leave it there.
I couldn't be sure of that until I found that you used a cigarette holder. Then I knew I was right. You did leave it here.
Go on, prove it.
Another thing, Patsy. Take a look at Mrs. Waldron's hands.
My hands? Why, they're beautiful. Beautifully manicured.
Exactly. Mrs. Waldron, with hands like yours, you don't scrub floors for a living. That dingy apartment of yours is merely a front.
Look out, Nick!
A gun, huh?
Yes, and I know how to use this gun, too, and I'm going to.
So sorry to hate you, Mrs. Waldron. Patsy.
Yes?
Take a look at Tom Fielding. See if he's still alive.
Right, Nick. You haven't got anything on me. You can't get
he's
me.
He's still
for
breathing,
anything.
Nick.
Good. Phone for an ambulance, quick.
Okay. Oh, but Nick, can you prove this charge against Mrs. Waldron? Can you be positive she and her husband framed Fielding?
Not yet, Patsy, but I'm so sure I'm right that I'll risk my reputation on it.
But, Nick, as long as there's the slightest doubt about it, shouldn't you call the DA and give Johnny Waldron the benefit of the doubt?
No, Patsy. As far as I'm concerned, there's no doubt whatsoever. I'm so sure I'll even risk Johnny's life on it.
Hello, Nick Carter's office. Oh, yes, Lieutenant. Yes. Yes. It was. He is. I see. Well, thank you, Lieutenant. Yes, I'll tell Nick. Goodbye.
Was that the report from police headquarters, Patsy?
Yes, it was Lieutenant Riley. And you were right, Nick. That gun you took from Mrs. Waldron was registered in Johnny's name. And she lied about taking the gun away from Fielding and shooting him in self-defense. Fielding's fingerprints weren't on the gun anywhere, but hers were all over it.
Did they check with the bullet when you picked out of that desk? The one that was fired at us?
Yes, and it came from the same gun.
Fine. And what about Fielding? What did Riley say?
He's going to live. What's more, he regained consciousness long enough to make a statement.
Good.
Oh, Nick, that Mrs. Waldron was certainly clever. She was planting the jewels in Fielding's safe when he came in the room and caught her, so she...
She held him at the point of her gun and knocked him out, bound his wrists and ankles, gagged him, and hid him away in another room.
What... How did you know that?
Very simple, Betsy. The marks where he'd been tied were still on his wrists when I examined him, and also there was a bump on his head.
Nick, you're always holding out on me. And one other thing. What made you think Fielding's life would be in danger way back when we were in Mrs. Waldron's apartment the second time?
Curious, huh? Well, Patsy, after your inspired remark about hands, I suddenly realized what it was about Mrs. Waldron that puzzled me. It was her hands. I knew that with hands like hers, she couldn't be earning her living scrubbing floors.
Oh, I see.
And if she were lying about that, it was very probable she was lying about everything.
And the whole thing was a plot to make Fielding look guilty.
But why should that make you suddenly afraid that something might be going to happen to Fielding?
Patsy, if she and Johnny were so anxious to get Johnny a reprieve that they were willing to give up the jewels to make it look as if Fielding were really the guilty man, it was entirely possible that she might go further and kill Fielding and try to make it look as if he killed himself.
But how would that help Johnny Waldron?
Well, if it was done right, it would look as if he were remorseful at having let Johnny take the blame. And she almost got away with it.
But she didn't, because Nick arrived in the nick of time. You're a wonderful detective, Mr. Carter.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, at midnight last night, Johnny Waldron went to the electric chair to pay for the crime of having murdered Mrs. Cornelius Fielding. His dramatic last-minute attempt to get a reprieve failed, thanks to the quick action of that master detective, Nick Carter. In those few short hours that Carter was actually on the case, he found the missing jewels, uncovered a well-laid plot between Johnny and his wife to pin the murder on Tom Fielding and save Fielding's life. Tom Fielding and the entire community owe a debt of gratitude to Nick Carter.
This has been another of the strange adventures of Nick Carter, Master Detective, which are brought to you regularly at this time by WOR Mutual. Well, Nick, what happens in your next week's story? Well,
I want to tell you the story of the time that I quite accidentally stumbled onto a terrible crime. Or to be more correct, I stumbled onto evidence that a terrible crime had been committed.
That doesn't sound like a very unusual thing for you to do.
Except for one little fact, Mr. Ripley. We didn't know where or when the crime had been committed.
In spite of the fact that we heard the story of the murder from the victim's own lips.
As a matter of fact, we even heard the murder committed.
And we were powerless to do anything about it.
If you're trying to make me curious about it...
We are.
You're certainly succeeding.
Well, it's as unusual a tale as I've had the pleasure of telling in a long while, I assure you. So until next week, so long.
So long, folks.
And so long to you, Nick and Patsy. In the strange adventure you have just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark. Patsy by Helen Choate. The story was written for Nick Carter by Barth Conray. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was under the direction of Jock McGregor. Next week, at this same time, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
Records of Death, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Unclaimed Box.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The Return of Nick Carter is produced in the studios of WOR and is broadcast over most of these stations every Saturday evening at 7 o'clock Eastern Wartime. And don't forget that the adventures of Nick's adopted son, Chick Carter, are broadcast over most of these stations Mondays through Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime. This is Mutual.
My name's Jeff Regan. I get 10 a day in expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Lyon. Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, investigator, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of Cain and Abel and the Santa Maria.
Started. It was one of those cold, clammy mornings that the Chamber of Commerce doesn't like to have in print. I was in my place working on a 4-minute egg that tasted like a boiled golf ball when the phone began bouncing. Now, I let it ring a while, and I got to thinking that it might be an old-fashioned girl who knew how to cook. It was the Lion. Hello, Regan talking.
This is me. I've been working all morning.
I'll buy you a time clock. Get to the point.
Lucky day. I just talked to Dunn and Bradstreet.
How are they?
Now, don't be funny. We got a new client, and they tell me when the Treasury Department gets in trouble, they come to him.
Yeah?
The guy's name is Abel Roderick. Got a special from him an hour ago. He asked for a man, and I'm sending you, Regan.
You're sending me where?
His ranch. He raises horses.
Horses don't talk. What's bothering him?
Maybe it's his wife. Tell me she's got a pair of legs you never forget. He just said he wanted an operator out there by 12 o'clock.
You never learn, do you?
This means no.
What else does it mean?
We'll go as far as homicide and arson when they got pockets as long as his.
Money all you ever think about.
Yeah, you learn something when you're as old as I am. That's all there is to think about.
Well, then get yourself another boy and start teaching him. I don't learn easy.
Now, just a minute. That's no attitude.
Taking somebody's check before you know who's who and what's what means trouble.
Jeffrey, please. You misunderstand me. I wouldn't jeopardize your bond or the good reputation of International by accepting an unreliable client.
Look, last week that guy had a record longer than a roll of ticker tape.
I've been with Harry Presidio all morning. He knows Abel Roderick.
Yeah?
He's the grandson of Gallant Roderick. Name used to be Rodriguez. One of our finest old California families. Jeffrey, he's a gentleman like yourself.
Well, that's nice.
And he needs our assistance. Well?
All right, where is it?
In and route between here and Santa Ana. Take Firestone.
Yeah?
Now, you run out there and see what Mr. Roderick wants. And, Jeffrey.
I know.
Call me, Jeffrey. Call me if you run into any trouble.
Well, when the lion hung up, he sounded as happy as a chorus girl with a new mink coat. Well, he's a smart guy, I guess, but he uses check stubs for a telephone directory. Well, the home of Abel Roderick wasn't too hard to find. All I had to do was to get out on the highway and look for a hill. That's where it was. One of those old Spanish-type places with a block of porches, windows, and lots of iron grillwork. Yeah, 20 years ago, it might have rated the good home section, but now you couldn't tell where the grass stopped and the weeds began. It's kind of used up and sad, like a derby winner with a broken leg. A tall blonde guy, about 30, in a black polo shirt, was stretched out on a beach chair in the front porch. He pulled off his dark glasses and watched me get out of the car and come up the steps. And he gave me one of those looks, like he was already tired of knowing me.
We don't want any.
How do you know?
We never want anything. Go away.
I'm here to see Abel Roderick. You him?
No.
But he lives here, doesn't he?
Yes. Who are you?
My name's Regan.
So?
I want to see him.
Go ahead. See him.
Everybody as nice as you.
Oh, I got a merit badge for being the nicest. What did you say your name was?
Regan.
What did you say you wanted to see him about?
I didn't say.
Well, it's too hot to play games, so I'll tell you. I don't like you and he won't like you.
Well, now, what am I supposed to do? Roll down the stairs?
It might help, baby.
Well, where'd you find him, James?
Janie, this is Mr. Regan. He came to see your husband. I guess he has business with him.
Hello, Mr. Regan. Is Abel expecting you?
At 12.
You're 10 minutes late.
Well, I'm still trying to see him.
He's in the study. Come on.
I'll see you later, Regan.
I thought I knew all of Abel's business acquaintances, but I don't remember you.
Oh, no, I'm a new one.
And what do you do?
A lot of things.
You're very interesting, Mr. Regan.
Mm-hmm.
Will you be coming here often?
I don't know.
I hope so.
You keep your husband in a vault?
I'd like to. You're cute. Here we are. This is Abel's study. I guess he stepped out for a moment. Would a drink take off the rough edges?
Might.
Good. I'll make you one.
Okay. Where are the horses?
Horses? We gave that up a long time ago. We've given up a lot of things, Mr. Regan. Let's not worry about that. Yes, okay.
Thanks. That blonde boy out on the porch doesn't like me.
Okay. He doesn't like anybody. But let's not worry about him, either.
You're crowding me.
Don't you like to be crowded?
It all depends on whose wife is doing it.
You're worried about Abel?
I'm drinking his whiskey.
I've never had any complaints.
So I don't see why you should.
What kind of a nasty crack is that?
You figure it, lady.
Mr. Nobody talks a little Janie like that.
Hello, my dear. Introduce me to our visitor.
Oh, Abel. This is Mr. Regan, darling. He says he has business with you.
Regan? Oh, Regan. Yes, of course. How do you do, Mr. Regan? I'm Abel Roderick.
How are you?
I see Janie's made you comfortable with a drink, so we can get right down to business. Janie, my dear, why don't you ask Kane if he'd like to play some tennis?
You're not very subtle, darling, but I was just leaving.
That's a good girl.
I hope to see you again.
Don't let her worry you, Regan. It's an act.
Do I look worried?
She's lovely, and if you're young and tall and Janie's around, she adopts you.
I wasn't an orphan.
She'll be sulky all day now. Well, thanks for coming out. I hope you can help me.
Well, so far, I don't even know who's on the team.
A man in my alleged position is quite often the object of subterfuge. You can understand that.
Well, you mean because you got money, yeah.
To be quite frank, I have no money, Mr. Regan.
That's going to come as a shock to somebody I know.
Who?
Never mind, go on.
It's my grandfather, Gallant Roderick. He controls all of the wealth in this family.
You his front man?
The eldest son of a son. And I live in this deplorable old shack waiting for grandfather to die.
How long have you been waiting?
Too long, Mr. Regan. But I'm past 40 now. I don't know how to do anything else, so I continue to wait. Along with my devoted brother, Kane, who has the same thing to look forward to.
Yeah, I met him.
And if you think he's bad, you should meet my grandfather. He fitted us with these charming names, Kane and Abel.
Well, what's all this got to do with me?
Here. Look at these. Two little ships of silver. Perfect replicas of the Pinta and Nina, named after Columbus's fleet.
Yeah, you can't buy stuff like that anymore. Not even on a time plan.
Hardly. 20 years' work on the part of an ancient silversmith in Madrid. And a prized possession of the Rodriguez family for 7 generations. My great-great-great-grandmother wore them on her wedding dress.
Where's the other one?
You guessed it, Mr. Regan. The Santa Maria is missing. Janie wore it to Cyril's night before last.
She'd lose it?
Nothing so simple. It was stolen.
How?
Oh, she was with Kane. It was late when they got back. A masked man stopped their car on the turnoff. According to Janie, he was very polite, merely removed the Santa Maria, took nothing else.
What about Kane?
He was passed out. Janie was driving. Regan, the usual thing is for me to get a telephone call and have an opportunity to buy it back. Isn't that right?
Well, a heist job usually works that way, yeah.
Well, I haven't been contacted. I'm getting worried.
What does your insurance company say?
My grandfather owns the insurance company. I've told no one but you.
You don't want him to know about it, huh?
Well, he might cut me off if he thinks I've been careless. What do you advise me to do?
Wait for that phone call and buy it back.
I'm willing to buy it back, but the truth of the matter is grandfather will be in from the east this week. The first thing he does when he comes out here is ask to see those ships.
Well, now, look, whoever pulled the job couldn't unload a thing like that without being caught. And if he melted it down, he'd be lucky to get $50. He's bad off as you are.
Do you think you could hurry it up?
Well, I know a couple of people.
Then you'll try and contact them for me.
I'll do what I can.
Oh, thank you, Regan. Now we just sit back and wait for my ship to come in. Bad joke, huh?
I left him sitting there in that big room. He looked about as happy as a St. Bernard with a stomachache. Well, he'd have probably felt worse if he'd have been outside on the porch. Janie was there with his brother, only they didn't hear me. Well, maybe they were just checking each other for broken ribs. I didn't bother to ask. Out on the highway, about a mile from the place, a 49 Nash picked me up. I turned off a couple of times on those little roads to make sure, but he stuck with me. Once he got real close, but he was wearing dark glasses and a straw hat and could have been Whistler's mother for all I knew. When I pulled into the lot by our building about 3 o'clock, he drifted along with the Broadway traffic. I took his license number and then I backed out and drove over to 3500 Hope Street.
So I said, where do I go see my friend Moriarty?
Okay, buddy, well, let's see.
I want to trace a license number.
Accident?
No.
Day, man. Driveway to 11.
Thanks.
Next.
I want to know who's registered for these plates right here.
4E7542. This year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a private detective. I think it might be connected with the case.
Yeah, makes you think that.
Well, the car followed me this afternoon.
Yeah.
Just tell me who owns it, will you?
Then what?
Well, then I'm going to write you a letter.
I don't collect stamps.
You worked here too long, lady.
You telling me. 6 years I collected fines A through G. Now I'm doing this. Thanks, huh?
Who does the car belong to?
I ain't got a look. A lot of cars in Los Angeles. Thousands of cars. Mad months would blow his brains out if he knew just how many cars there really are around this town. Well, Ruby DeRoy knows, mister, and don't you forget it. 47542 belongs to a guy named Richard I. Chambers.
Address?
Hotel DeSoto.
Thanks.
Come back anytime, doll. Glad to help you out.
The name Richard I. Chambers meant about as much to me as a shipload of stale bread, but it didn't take 20/20 vision to see that there was a connection. And the whole thing was phony. It was like cutting your leg off to cure your bunions. Well, I went back to the office and checked with the lion.
Okay, Regan, give it to me.
It's a heist. One of the family heirlooms.
It's our meat. When was it lifted?
2 nights ago.
Any contacts yet?
No, none. That's why it's screwy.
What do you mean, screwy?
Well, it was a little silver ship called the Santa Maria. Now, they'd have to sell it back to Roderick or go on release.
Where does that leave us?
With another bum case.
Now, don't say a thing like that.
Well, your dope on Roderick was secondhand.
Tell me.
His grandfather keeps the keys.
How do you know?
Roderick said so.
You shouldn't let out family secrets. Now, you let me worry about that. Just find his little ship.
Yeah.
Guy called a half hour ago, looked the number for you.
Chambers?
Yeah, who told you?
Who did?
I want you to phone him.
Never mind, skip that. I know where to get him. Things began to move. That meant that all the cards were out and somebody was asking for bets. Over at the DeSoto Hotel, the clerk told me that 305 belonged to Chambers. He was a little guy, about a head shorter than Margaret O'Brien. He shoved 3 inches of nose out at me through a crack in the door.
I thought I left word for you to phone.
You, Chambers?
I was having a beauty nap. Come back in an hour,
yeah,
will you?
You need it. Look out!
Hey, what is this? Oh, tough guy, yeah? All right, you're tough. I think you're a bum.
All right, simmer down, Junior. You'll never make Eagle Scout.
Oh, you're so good. I gotta take that from you, huh?
We're gonna talk.
What makes you think so?
Everybody's grown up now.
Dickie Chambers talks when he feels like talking.
All right, work, have it your way.
Hey, that kind of stuff ain't gonna get you nothing, Regan.
Your weight's up, Dickie. You got a different job now.
I said you're a bum.
You tell me today.
Ask your mother.
What you want me to phone about?
Wrong track, gumshoe. The 2 buck window's downstairs.
You're in this somewhere, and I want to know where.
Through being tough, Regan?
No. I'll let the boys in the personnel division handle you.
What do you mean?
That shiv on your dress is about an inch too long to be legal.
Call him. See where it gets you.
I'll send you a nickel later.
Okay, I'll open. Just that I don't like to get shoved around, that's all.
Why didn't you figure that before you got tangled up?
I'm your contact.
All right, come on. Let's put the show on the road. How much does it cost?
$5,000 and tens and twenties.
Go on.
Tonight, 10 o'clock. You come with him.
Where?
Mile aside of Santa Ana Airport. Little road turns left off 101. Drive 2 miles and park.
And then what?
Well, if you got the $5,000, you don't try anything funny. He gets his little silver ship back.
That it?
That's it, people. Happy?
See you later, Dickie.
Oh, I'm checking out tomorrow.
Hey, look, Buster, you aren't any heist man. They come smoother. What's your angle?
Maybe I love jewelry. But you care if maybe I love jewelry.
I don't. A guy like you's got to love something. I called Roderick and told him what I'd found out. He sounded relieved, like he'd been underwater for a long time and was just coming up for air. He said he'd get the cash, and I made arrangements to meet him at his place later on. Then I called the lion and told him. After that, I stopped off at a place on Wilshire, and I ran up a tab watching a skinny guy trying to make a piano sound like a symphony orchestra. Well, I had some steak and potatoes, and then I drove back out to Roderick's place. It was about 9 o'clock when I got there, and the same people were on the front porch doing the same thing. I remembered what the lion had said about those legs of hers.
Oh, Joe.
Having fun?
Oh, Regan, huh? I thought I told you we didn't want any.
That was 8 hours ago.
We still don't want any.
I'm still here to see your brother.
Small business?
Something like that.
I don't like you any more now than I did this morning, and I hated you then.
Yeah, well, I'm going to cry about that when I get home.
You're pretty smart, aren't you, Regan?
Kane, please be careful.
He's awful smart.
Kane.
Let me go.
Yeah, let him go, lady. I'll give him back.
Now, I'll show you trying to spy on people, huh? I'm going to give you something, people.
Ah. He's been drinking. Now, look out.
Look out, nothing. Go on. Oh!
Well, I guess he deserved that. He's nasty when he works at it.
How was the other time?
There aren't any other times.
Too bad.
Maybe he'll be different when he wakes up. What do you mean about the liquor?
Skip it.
You're getting the wrong idea about everything.
What are you here?
I was a hat check girl in a cheap nightclub.
What's going on out here, Jamie? Oh, Regan, you're here.
What was he acting up about tonight?
Mr. Regan.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. Take care of him, will you, Janie?
Of course, Angel.
That's a good girl, Janie. Well, you all ready, Regan?
You got it?
All set. I'll be home early, Janie. Come on, Regan, let's go.
Well, we climbed in my car. We drove to the place Dickie Chambers told me about. It wasn't hard to find. It was a flat dirt road to the edge of the airport. We clicked off 2 miles on the speedometer, then we switched off our lights and parked. It was dark and quiet there, like the inside of an empty barrel. Roderick didn't have much to say. He just sat there chewing on a cigar and looking at nothing. He was real good at waiting. I looked at my watch about 9:53, then I saw the headlights of another car coming down the road from a long way off. Roderick nodded his head, and I began to have a feeling like I was standing on top of the trap, and the warden had just smiled at the hangman.
That must be ours, Regan. Do you think we should switch on our headlights? They may not see us.
Well, unless they got wings, they got to pass us.
They don't seem to be slowing down much, do they?
Well, get out of the car.
What?
Get out of the car.
Say, what is
this? Don't talk. Move.
Oh, all right. What's got into you, Regan?
Come on.
Well, we can't just... Well, they'll think something's wrong.
But it's a packed deck. You're a ringer.
I'm not sure.
Spun him around and he fell against the car. I pulled out my gun, but it didn't do any good. Whoever it was must have been in vaudeville. That was the fastest disappearing act since Houdini.
You're listening to the story of Cain and Abel and the Santa Maria. Tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. If you are a graduate nurse between the ages of 21 and 45, you may be eligible for a commission in the Regular Officers Reserve Army Nurse Corps. If you are eligible and meet the high standards to qualify to serve with this fine organization, you may elect active or inactive status. In addition to this privilege, they also have the opportunity to take advantage of special training courses. So if you believe that you qualify for a commission in the Army Nurse Corps Reserve, apply now to the Adjutant General's Office, Washington, D.C. That's the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now, back to the story of Cain and Abel and the Santa Maria and Jeff Regan, investigator.
Well, there was enough loose lead around there to start a scrap drive. Whoever it was wanted to make real sure. My car was as full of holes as a canceled check. I found a .45 slug in the seat packing, and I piled Roderick inside, and I drove over to a motor court on the highway. An old lady with a dust mop or a head of hair registered us and complained about all the drunks there were in this world, and then when I got rid of her, I went out to the phone booth and gave the lion a ring. I woke him up.
It's 11 o'clock at night. What do you want?
I'm in a jam.
You're always in a jam. Tell me about it in the morning.
Look, I'm giving it to you right now.
You drunk.
I've been with your client trying to get that ship back.
How'd you do?
I got lead instead of silver.
What do you mean by that?
Somebody doesn't like Roderick.
Who is it?
I don't know. We got there for the buyback and somebody opened up.
They can't do that.
Well, they did.
Oh, where's Roderick now?
With me. Get a doctor and come on over.
What?
He got in the way when they started the 4th of July.
Well, take him to a hospital.
Now look, Fatso, he isn't hurt bad, but he needs help. You're always talking about money, now here's your chance to make some.
Yeah?
They'll give you a bonus if you keep him out of the papers.
I'll be there in half an hour.
Well, the lion showed up 20 minutes later. He had a long-faced guy with him who said he was a doctor. He looked more like an undertaker, but I didn't argue. I told the lion to keep Roderick there till I phoned back. Then I beat it over to the DeSoto Hotel. The door to 305 was open. Dickie Chambers had company, only he wasn't receiving. He was lying under his sheet. A fat guy in a wrinkled suit seemed to be running things.
Come on in, brother. I didn't know Dickie had any friends.
I guess he didn't.
Who are you?
I'm a guy who met him once. Who are you?
Ed Granger, constable. This is my territory. What's your name?
Regan, private investigator.
International?
Mm-hmm.
The Lion's Eye, huh? Know anything about this?
I talked to him this afternoon. He gave up riding horses for other things.
What kind of thing?
He was contact man on a heist job.
Yeah? Where do you come in?
I was hired. That's why I met Dickie.
Mind telling me by who?
Mm-mm. The client, Granger.
This is a murder. Okay. Fair to go for now.
When'd you find him?
A little while ago. Clerk called, said he heard shooting. I came down with the boys and found Dickie doing the long sleep. Happened less than an hour ago.
He's a tough little guy.
Well, them 45s don't know nothing about that.
45?
Big holes. Chest and neck, close range. Corner's gonna lose 2 bits. He thinks it's a 38.
Well, look, if it turns out big, try this one for a match here.
Oh, you've been playing games tonight?
Somebody gave it to me.
Connected?
Ballistics will tell you.
Anything else?
No.
What'd you come back for?
Talk to Dickie.
No good, huh?
No good. I should have asked him earlier.
We can get you through International.
Yeah.
Well, if you got anything, remember the name. Ed Granger.
He was peeking under that sheet looking at Chambers when I left. With kind of a sad smile on his face, like somebody put gasoline in his thermos bottle. I drifted across the street for a package of cigarettes, and then I came back and climbed in my car thinking about the whole thing. I don't know how long I sat there in the car, but when I looked up, there was a shadow against the wall of the building. It was a good-looking shadow.
Doing your homework?
Yeah, I do for a diploma.
Congratulations. What would you like for a gift?
How about a little silver ship, huh?
Sorry, too expensive. Try again.
All right, give me a 45.
What would you do with that?
Give it to a cop named Granger.
Then what?
All right, go home and go to bed.
You haven't asked me what I'm doing yet.
I know.
Kane?
Him too?
He isn't so bad when you get to know him.
From where you're sitting, he must have wings.
Well, if it isn't the gum heel. You ready for a laugh?
What do we got, a comedy?
Take a look, Janie. Okay, bright boy, where is he?
You sober enough to shoot straight?
I took the pledge.
Before or after you came by us out on that road?
After, baby.
You don't smell like it.
Where is he?
Try my car trunk. I'm using him for ballast.
What did you do with him, Regan?
Kane, there's some people coming. Has he told you what he did with Abel?
Not yet.
I'm going to have to talk to him somewhere else.
Right, Angel. Okay, Regan, come on, get out. Turn, Regan. Now turn around.
Let me guess what's coming.
It's a trip to the moon. Sit tight, baby. Here you go. Oh!
I settled down to having a headache. Then the headache went someplace and I had nothing. Oh, it was a nice play. Everybody was a quarterback and everybody had the ball. I looked as good as a fat girl in a French bathing suit. It was some time later, maybe 10 years. I had a mouthful of brandy and my throat was burning like an oil stagger. We were in Roderick's place. He was standing over me holding a bottle in one hand and a 45 in the other.
Coming around. Got to work fast.
Don't worry, he'll talk. Feeling better, baby? Well, you're going to feel worse. Now sit up, baby. Come on, it's time to talk.
Now, wait a minute, Kane. Wait, let me ask you. We're all alone here. No one's going to disturb us. And we'll find out anyhow. Why don't you tell us what you did with him?
I get a short memory. I forget things.
It's a shame to let Kane do this to you. I think you're pretty. Might not be able to stop him once you get started.
It's your idea, lady. I'm along for the view.
Iron Man went out with short skirts, but I guess you don't know it yet.
You look tough, brother, but you bruise easy.
You're already wearing striped pants. You mangled it when you tagged me tonight.
Think so? Tell me how.
All right. No one knew I was a detective but your brother. That meant you hired Dickie Chambers to find out.
So you know it. So what?
So you bumped Dickie when you thought it was finished.
Well, that makes you know I'm not kidding.
There's a constable named Granger.
Kane?
Relax, Angel, relax. Don't let him scare you. He hasn't told anything to anybody.
No?
No. If you did, we would have found him in a hospital. I saw him go down.
Are you sure?
Of course I am. Now all we got to do is find him. So let's get started. Well, you talk now, huh? No? It's gonna get worse, baby. You might have to write it later. You got hold of a bad label.
Stop it. This isn't getting us anything.
Yeah, but I'm having fun.
You'll kill him.
Let go of my arm.
Mr. B, now we need him. We've got to find him in the car with Abel. It's ruined if you kill him.
I said let go. Now, where were we, baby?
I said to stop.
Huh?
Get away from him.
Are you crazy or something?
We're fine if you can think. But you can't think. You're no good to me anymore.
Janie.
He shook all over a couple of times like he was saying no in a big way. And then he finally relaxed. She knelt down and took something out of his pocket. I tried to lift one of my arms, but I got about as far as I would trying to hook a whale with a salad fork. I must have looked real bad, because all of a sudden her eyes kind of lit up and she came over.
You're taking a lot of punishment, Mika.
Yeah, not as much as you're going to take.
It's a matter of opinion. By the way, you didn't happen to be carrying that $5,000.
You're looking for a stake?
Yeah. I'm going out prospecting.
Trip around the world?
Far enough to make some new connections. That's all a girl needs. Here. Here's the little ship. You didn't do it for nothing.
You run out of bullets?
No. If they ever get me, I'll say justifiable homicide. He's trying to kill you. You're my witness. Oh, you are pretty. Take care of yourself. Goodbye.
Take care of yourself. Goodbye. That's all she said, and that was the last I ever saw of her. Well, it seems that Janie and Kane had figured to tag both of us out on that road, and it'd all be blamed on a phony heist gang. There was a lot of insurance they could have turned into ready cash, but I had a feeling that when I made Abel get out of that car that night, it'd ruin things for him. Janie and Kane thought that they could still do it if they could find him and get it together again. That's why he went to work on me. Kane already killed Dickie Chambers because he thought there might have been a double cross, and I guess he was kind of crazy by the time he got around to me. Well, anyway, about 3 months later, a detective sergeant down in Miami Beach spotted Janie one night working a hat stand in a nightclub. Everybody wondered how he could recognize her. She dyed her hair, and it really changed her appearance. But it figured. You see, the police folder had a picture of her in a bathing suit. She couldn't change those legs.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.